if you just focus on being present and give 100% of yourself at whatever the task is at that moment in time, then I feel that you are one step closer to being able to have a much fuller life in which, you know, you can enjoy all the different aspects of what makes a life. And it's certainly not all work, and it's certainly not all play. So you have to be able to divide your time accordingly.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Secrets to Success. I appreciate all of you tuning in from around the world, choosing to pick up the pearls of wisdom from the amazing guest I have on. I'm so excited about today's guest because he is legendary and I've been following him for such a long time. He was brought up right here in London and has now become a world-renowned cosmetic dentist. He consistently produces exceptional, life-changing smile makeovers and has even been awarded one of America's best dentists with recognition in leadership of aesthetic dentistry. You may have seen him on The Tyra Banks Show, CNN, The Doctors, or his Instagram. It's no other than Dr. Sam Salla. Dr. Salla, it's a pleasure to sit down with you again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction.
Thank you. Well, how have you been? It's been about a year since we really sat down and spoke properly. Has everything picked up again in Beverly Hills?
Yes, it has. I mean, I think I speak on behalf of many people in the aesthetics industry. I think the pandemic had somewhat of a positive impact on anyone who's kind of in the field of making people look better, because people had a lot of time at home to reflect, a lot of these Zooms where, you know, they were kind of staring themselves in a screen. And things that potentially weren't bothering them before now became very apparent, and they were looking at it all day long. And so they made a conscious decision to fix it. So yes, things are very busy.
That's great. That's great to hear. So let's take it back then. Let's rewind all the way back to your younger years. So I wanted to find out what was so formative about your younger years, your experiences, your upbringing. I know you have Iranian parents, so, you know, your family traditions from them that formed you to who you are today. Like, you know, when we talk about morals, ethics, any life lessons, because, you know, when I look at you, I see someone who's got such great work ethic, your mindset of positivity as well. I see some of your Instagram stories talking about, you know, always got a good positive mindset. So what was it about your younger years that formed that?
Well, I was actually born in Iran, so I wasn't born in London. We left Iran when I was very young. I was 3 years old when we left. So yes, I was raised in London. And I feel that growing up in London as a young guy was really important for me, actually, because I think what's really nice about England is it's such a melting pot, and you've got people from all over the world who are there. So it introduces you to all these different cultures, to these different ethnicities. And it was amazing. And it's part of the reason that I now come back to London, because I feel the experience that I had as a child growing up in London was so important that now that I have children of my own, I want to introduce London to them. And I want to introduce some of what made me who I am by bringing them back.
Do you still have some family here in London, or has everyone moved over to the States with you?
No, I do. I mean, some of my immediate family is still in London. So it's, you know, it's kind of always going to be home for me in a way, because I think those early childhood memories, they stay with you. And it's such a point of comfort. So when I go back to London within 24 hours, it's kind of like, it's as if I never left. So, and I think wherever you are in the world, wherever you've been raised, it'll always have a very special place in my heart. And I think when you are asking me about ethics and things like that, I think the way that you're raised is so important. I think your mother and father play such a big role in terms of showing you what's important in life. And also as a child, I think if you're an observant child, you're able to learn from what you see. And sometimes when you're raised, you don't always see, you know, a very lovely picture, a very rosy picture. But I think if you're astute and if you are observant, then you can potentially turn a negative into a positive. So if you saw something as a child that you weren't too keen on, or you didn't feel had the best positive impact, then you're able to make a mental note that, you know, when I grow up, I'm not going to do it that way, or I'm going to learn from this issue and I'm going to, you know, turn it into something better for myself. So I think that's probably one of the things that was very important for me growing up is, and I think that's maybe it's genetics, maybe it's just, you know, who I am and how I was made up. I was always very, very astute and I was very, very observant. And I think in life, if you are that way and you have a positive mentality, then whatever you see, you can turn it into something that will better yourself and improve yourself.
Of course, wow. And then would you say in your younger years, and you've always had this entrepreneurial flair, because I know you've got your own vision, it's clear to see. Was that something that was when you were growing up, you always wanted to be your own boss, do things your way, have your own vision?
I don't know about being my own boss, but I think, yes, I think I was a dreamer. I was that kid who, you know, was always dreaming beyond of whatever my circumstances were at the time. So today we call that, you know, manifesting. But back then, you know, I just thought I was a daydreamer. And people would often say, they're like, come on, wake up, wake up. So yeah, I was the classic daydreamer. But today, you know, looking back, it's amazing because those things that I would be daydreaming about and, you know, and wishing for and thinking I would, you know, circumstances that I wanted for myself, you know, now have actually manifested into things that I you know, it's my reality, which is, I think is absolutely amazing.
That's amazing. As in, how did you use to do things? Because right now what I do, I have kind of like a vision board. So I have a vision board of, you know, and a house I want to buy my mum one day, buy my dad his dream car. I think it's going to look like, and I envision it all, put it onto a vision board. And, you know, think of different steps and routes of how I'm going to get there. When you were younger, did you do something like that?
No, I don't think I had a vision board. But by the way, I think that's a fantastic thing to do. I agree with stuff like that. For me, my vision board today is screenshots. So if there's something that I like or there's something that I want, or my phone has become that for me. So I've literally had circumstances where I've made a video, and in the video to myself, I've said, you know, I want XYZ to happen, and I want, you know, this, this, and this. And then I've scrolled through my phone, you know, like 12 months, yeah, you know, a little bit later, and I'll be like, oh my God, I said I wanted that. And, you know, and that actually happened. So I think there is an enormous power in manifesting what you want. So I think it's great that you do a vision board.
Amazing, amazing. So I remember when we last time we spoke, you said that when you were younger, because you liked getting your point across so much and you loved me talking, that law was something that you were thinking of going into. So you had work experience, you didn't enjoy it. And then after you had some work experience in dentistry, and that led you to the field. So I think before, even now, you'd say, you know, dentistry is an entrepreneurial field, because after you graduate, you can go off and set up your own business and all. But what was it of dentistry specifically that drew you to it and made you want to study it and become a dentist?
I would say the main reason that I went into dentistry is you touched on it, is that after I did work experience at a very early age with a dentist in London called Norman Mills, I felt that that experience had a phenomenal impact on me, you know, personally, because I saw the connection, I saw how he was doing it, and I saw the interactions, and I saw the flow of his days, and I saw, you know, how everything kind of came about and how he was able to incorporate his skills and his personality into his job. And I immediately felt that this is something that would work for me and my personality. So that really was a major turning point for me, and that's ultimately what made me decide to get into dentistry.
Okay, sure. And I knew after you studied dentistry here at King's College London, you then did your vocational training here. And then after you had your ISA and going to the States. And again, from my last conversation, I remember you saying back in the days, not so much now, that aesthetic dentistry was a little bit frowned upon, because here in the UK, if it was functioning fine, then there's no need to touch it. If it's not broke, you don't need to go up and, you know, do so around it. While in America,
yeah,
they were more open to aesthetic dentistry. Nowadays times have changed, but I also thought that, you know, America as a place where, you know, it's a dreamer's land, right? You go there to fulfill your wildest dreams, that American dream, and, you know, start your own business and bring out your vision. Aside from that, what was it that America gave you that the UK didn't at the time that made you want to take that transition and go and practice there?
What America gave me, you know, it's going to sound really cliche, but it is, you know, when I came here, I did feel that it was the land of opportunity. When I was finished with dentistry and my studies and everything, and I was working in London, I felt that there was a lot of barriers of entry for a young guy. I felt that youth was kind of frowned upon slightly, and you know, and you just, you know, everyone was geared up for seeing this guy who, you know, had gray hair and really old and things like that. And obviously I just graduated, so I certainly didn't look like that. And I just felt like when I came to America, it was the opposite. I felt that, you know, I was embraced, and there was, you know, and there's a slightly different work ethic, and there was so many opportunities, and the availability and the support staff and the auxiliaries, and all of that was already set up. So it was almost kind of the infrastructure was here to help somebody who wanted to start something new. Whereas at the time in London, and I'm obviously talking, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't feel that it was so conducive. And I felt like every, you know, everything that I wanted to achieve, there would be a barrier, and there would be like, well, no, and there's a no, and there's a no. And for me, America was more like, yes, and we can, and we will. And so that's how I felt about starting off in America.
Okay, sure. And I think one of the things as well, I don't know in America, but in Europe and in the UK, dental schools, they don't really teach you business studies. They don't really teach you entrepreneurship. Where were you able to learn that to be able to set up your own clinic and do things your way? Because I think at King's, they, was that a module, was business and entrepreneurship of how to set up a dental clinic involved in the curriculum at the time?
No, that certainly wasn't. And to my knowledge, it's still not something that, you know, is wildly spoke about in dental school. Entrepreneurialism, I feel, comes from within. It's a very, very hard thing to teach somebody. To be a true entrepreneur means that you have to be able to take risks, and not everybody is comfortable doing that. The way human beings are wired, and just the way we are, is we like routine, we like stability, we to a degree like consistency, and to a degree we like for things to stay the same, because that's kind of where our comfort zone is. And to be an entrepreneur is almost all of the things that we're wired, you know, not to be. So, you know, to take these risks and take yourself out of your comfort zone and to do things that, you know, is not consistent, and there's a lot of change, and change can be daunting. So I find it so hard to be able to, you know, think that there's a class or something that you can teach to make somebody feel that way, because it's, I really feel that it's something that you have to have inherently within you. It's this burning desire to be successful. And I remember early on when I had moved to America, you know, I think maybe year three or year four, I was actually quite unhappy here. And I felt that it, you know, I was beginning to, you know, on a personal level, and things, you know, some things were not quite going the way I wanted them to. And so many times I just felt like, well, maybe I should just go back to London, and maybe I should just go back to London. And at the time, I just remember that burning desire to succeed was preventing me from doing that, because I felt that if I did, then that would be failure. And that would mean that, you know, I didn't accomplish what I wanted to do when I came out here. And so I just persevered. So entrepreneurialism comes with, you know, there's pain, there's anguish. You know, I think, you know, people read these magazines and look at Forbes and things like that, and they look at the success, but you also have to highlight and acknowledge the fact that with that success comes, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of dark days, a lot of sadness, a lot of, you know, anger and frustration. So it's not all sunshine and butterflies, you know, when you use the word entrepreneurialism. But ultimately, if that burning desire is there, and you keep at it, then that's what will ultimately lead to you being successful.
Amazing. That's so beautifully said. Thank you for that. With that as well, let's dive a little bit deeper into that, because we have a lot of listeners here who are young dentists who do have that entrepreneurial flair. And, you know, mm-hmm. one of the things that's really important to highlight is everything you just said. Is you're not going to be successful from day one. There is no overnight
success. Absolutely not, especially in dentistry. Dentistry, that's one of the first things that I tell all the younger dentists that reach out to me, because they all, you know, especially in today's society where everybody's interested in instant gratification and they see everything happening instantly and everyone's like instantly successful and instantly famous and instantly this and instantly that, I really don't feel that, you know, you can have that mindset in dentistry. It takes a long time. First of all, you have to master your skill. And that's something it just absolutely will not happen instantly. So you have to put in the time, you have to put in the dedication in order to be able to become a true master at this job, because it's a skill and it's a difficult skill, and it's multifaceted. As a dentist, there are so many things within the job that you have to be able to do very, very well in order to become successful. You know, you can't just be great at this clinical and not be able to do, you know, the patient interaction. And then you also have to think about, you know, how the things run from a business standpoint. And then you have to look at, you know, now you have to be very cautious about your ceramics. And so there is so many elements to this job. So that's the first thing. So that's not going to happen instantly. So it does take a lot of time. And I think that's what a lot of the younger dentists find frustrating, is that, you know, they want something that's just going to make them, you know, be instantly successful. And I don't think that can happen in dentistry.
Yes. And I think definitely in this world of social media now, we have likes and follows and stuff like that. A lot of people get lost in the world and kind of go away from the most important thing, which is the clinical side, getting your hands ready to be able to do the work you do now.
Yes.
For the younger dentist, then, what would you say is the best way to learn after you finish dental school? Did you go on a lot of different courses when you were training up, or was it just kind of like, you know, day in, day out, just doing the dentistry and learning from experience?
I mean, personally, that's more of what I did. I think that courses are great, and you know, and especially today, you know, you have so many ways in which you can observe another clinician's work. So, you know, there's podcasts and there's, you know, and you can look at their work on social media and you can go on online classes and you can, you know, now that the pandemic's coming to an end, you can go to, you know, to live courses. So that's all very important. But as a dentist, I don't think you can pick it up by just observing. The real skill set comes into play by performing it. You know, if you could literally spend 24 hours a day watching somebody do something, but if you're not doing it consistently, I don't think the skill set's going to come, because it's a manual skill. You know, we're not studying a language. It's not something that you can read about and read about and read about. It's something that you have to do with your hands. And so it's the doing that's going to make you good at it. And that's why there's the time factor, because it takes time to be able to do as many cases as somebody who, you know, who's been in the field, you know, 10, 20 years. So I would say, yes, you know, go do your courses, study about it. But ultimately, you want to do as many cases as you possibly can, because that's where the experience is going to come in. And that's how you're going to be able to finesse your skills. And you're going to be able to learn from your own cases. I've learned far more from my own cases than I can learn from any teacher, because you know, that's something that's very intimately reactive to what you did. If you go to Dr. X's course and he says, well, I do this, and you know, after 10 years this happens, well, that's, you know, what happened as a result of what he did with his hands, what she did with her hands. Now, if you do something, you need to see what the outcome is from the work that you've done. And so again, I feel that when you practice, and the longer you practice and the more of those recalls that you do and the more of the outcomes that you actually see the results of, that's how you also will learn a lot more in terms of, you know, what, how good to be at your profession and at your skill.
Going on from that, and say you've got the clinical skills now, you've done about, you know, 3-4 years, you feel like you're confident with your skill set. Let's move on to the business side of things now. So for yourself, I saw that you got established within the media when you went onto the Doctor's Show, the Tyra Banks Show, and I felt that that's also important to be able to build up your brand, to build up a business portfolio as well. Talk me through how you were able to do that and how important was it for you to have the success that you do today?
I think it's important to have an identity. And today, your identity, it's, you know, you have these massive platforms on which you can broadcast what your identity is. And so I think where it all starts is making sure that you yourself know exactly what your identity is. Because I see now a lot of dentists who they're like, well, I want to be just like, you know, Dr. X. Mm-hmm. Now, that I think is a problem today, because if you model yourself after somebody else, then that automatically means that you're losing authenticity. And I think that turns out to be a roadblock in terms of becoming successful as you, as an individual. Mm-hmm. So I would say that for the, you know, first sort out your own identity and have a clear vision of what that is. Once you have that, then your brand will be authentic to you. Mm-hmm. And once you have an authentic brand that's you, then you will draw a pool of people through all the sources, you know, and you don't have to go on television and you don't have to, you know, do all that kind of stuff. You will draw a pool of people, of like-minded people who see your vision and are aligned with your vision and will then come to you as a result of that. And then from there, that's, you know, how you'll become successful, because then they'll come and then it'll turn into a cycle, and then they go home and they'll tell their friends, and then it's just, you know, and it's beautiful. And you don't need to have a million patients when you're one doctor. So, you know, I think the other thing is that younger dentists are obsessed with numbers and, you know, and this, you know, massive popularity. You know, as a dentist, you don't need that, you know, especially if you're dealing with cosmetic dentistry, where, you know, there's only a finite number of patients that you can see within one day. So I would say for the younger dentists, you know, don't be discouraged. Don't try and turn yourself into somebody who, you know, has to have, you know, millions of people following them, because, you know, you've just got one set of hands. So just concentrate on that, and then the success will flourish accordingly.
For sure. Speaking from that, then let's go on to your team now. So as you said, you're one person, you've got a brand, you've got a vision, you've got your own identity. So how are you able to create a team and a team culture that believes your vision and brings about that vision? So when you're hiring someone, what are the things that you look out for, from, you know, an associate dentist to someone who's on the front of house, so receptionist staff? What are the key attributes you're looking for, and how are you able to have your whole team encouraged on a day-to-day basis to, you know, see your vision and believe it themselves?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So when you're hiring on board, you can't expect to bring somebody on board who is your brand, because your brand is you. And so when you're bringing somebody on board, you have to undertake rigorous training in order to explain to that person what your brand is. So that's not something that I look for when I'm hiring. But there are core attributes to a person's individual way that they're, you know, that they are, that you can't train. And so those are things that you want to look for when you're doing the interview process. So you want to know, you know, if somebody is inherently, you know, a hard worker, if somebody, you know, you want to know, you want to get an understanding of where somebody's ethics lie, where their morals lie. You want to get an understanding of, you know, how importantly they take their work, how much pride they take in their work. So those are some of the attributes that you want to look at. And then once you bring them on board, then, like I said, when you have a brand identity and you're authentic and you know exactly, you know, what it is that you are, then you have that all set out. And anybody who comes on board, then you have a protocol. So you're like, you know, when this happens, this is what we do, because this is, you know, this is how we do it. And so this is where the training comes into place. And I feel that a lot of people, whether it's dentistry or other industries, they might get frustrated with their employees, but sometimes you have to take a look at yourself as the employer and be like, well, why is it that they're not doing what you want them to do? And sometimes it just comes down to, well, you never told them that this is how you want it done, because you can't assume that anybody that you hire is going to come on board and they're going to just be your brand or be what you want them to be if you don't give them the protocol. So within my team, everybody is trained within the scope of whatever it is that they do. So obviously the administrative staff have a certain protocol that they have to follow. The clinical staff have a different type of protocol that they have to follow. The laboratory staff have a different line that they have to, protocols that they have to follow. And then in addition to that, we have group meetings, and then that's where we bring everyone together. Because the other thing what you don't want to do is, when you have a large team, is have them segregated doing their individual thing and there isn't communication between them, because that's how you can lose sight of things as well. So each of the groups need to know exactly what they need to do, but then everybody under the same umbrella also has to be aware of how this engine runs and how we get from point A to point B in a cohesive manner under the umbrella of the brand, so that we're all on the same page.
Okay. And how often would you say you have these meetings with the whole team? Do you do that on a...
Communication is absolutely key in my office. So we speak daily. We're always talking to one another. We're always communicating. We're always doing meetings. We have group chats going throughout the offices at all times, so that we're all on the same page. So it's not something that you can say, oh yes, well, you know, we do that once a month, or we do that, you know, no, because, you know, there's so much that happens within, you know, the volume of patients that we see and the number of, you know, people that we have traveling to see us and all the rest of it. We have to be in communication all the time so we don't lose sight.
So with what I was saying as well, though, with the brand being Dr. Sam Sella, and if I wanted to get dental treatment and I came to your clinic, I would want to see you, because, you know, you're the one who consistently showcases all of your great work, got a great reputation behind you. I'm sure many patients, when they come, they want to see you. I want to see their Dr. Sam Sella.
Right, and all my patients do. So I have a big team that helps me, but every case that you see on my Instagram page, it's me.
Wow. Okay.
So it is me. And I agree with you. I think if you put your name out there, you know, and you're right, you know, that's who they come for. You know, I do every consult. So, you know, they know who, you know, right off the bat, they know who's going to be working on them. And all the treatments are done by me.
Wow. Okay. So with that said, then, how are you able to produce the high quantity of work you do without, you know, compromising all of your cases? I see the quality in them. Amazing. Consistently amazing work. And you do so many. How are you able to keep up that quality at the same time, keep up all that quantity as well?
Oh my God. You should speak to my wife. She's angry at me because I'm a workaholic. I think it's just one of those things, you know, you just, if you love what you do and you're passionate about it, you take every case seriously. And obviously, you know, once your skill set gets to a certain level, you're able to produce the work faster than somebody who perhaps doesn't do the cases, as many of them as you do. So, and systems, you know, like I said, when you have a good system in place, you're able to be consistent and know exactly what it is that you're producing. When each case is, you go into it without a system, then you're not quite certain of the outcome, and there can be a lot of, you know, potential outcomes, and that's where the frustration comes into place, and that's where things can take potentially longer than they should. So again, it's one of those things that with experience you'll find that you get better and you learn how to make a system work for you. And with that comes productivity. And with that comes, you know, economies of scale and all the rest of it.
Okay. And my question is, do you have your own laboratory? I saw on your Instagram that you have some guys that produce all your work. Is that in-house or how does that work?
Yes. So all the ceramic that you see has been made with my own private laboratory. And I feel that that's hugely, hugely important today. Well, it's always been important, but it's one of the main reasons, in my opinion, that a cosmetic dentist is able to be consistent with the quality of work that they're producing, because you don't have that potential for miscommunication. So in the past, when a dentist was to prepare a tooth and then write on a piece of paper, please do this, and then send it off to a laboratory outside, there was just so much room for error and so much potential for misunderstanding and miscommunication and things like that. Whereas what we have here is the team is on site. They are part of our daily talks. They are part of the groups that we have. And of course, it all goes under my observation in terms of where the ceramic and where the direction is going within the design. So it's controlled much, much better. And I think you can only do that when you have your own lab.
Okay, great. And do you use a digital workflow at all? Or is there even kind of just bespoke, kind of custom made? How would you describe your workflow?
It's an integrative approach. So we have obviously all the digital technology, but it ends with the finesse and the artistry of the ceramist.
Wow, amazing. Okay. So touching on that then, we're speaking about your work life and speaking about your wife as well, who tells you you're always working. When I look at your Instagram, I see a lot of time spent with your beautiful children and your wife as well. How are you able to manage that so well? For me at the moment right now, because it's my early years, my girlfriend at the time was always complaining that I don't have enough time because I'm always trying to, at the same time, do my clinical skills, but kind of build myself up a brand and reputation as well. You're a man of many talents. You know, you've got your own clinic, you've got your own brand, and you're a dentist as well. So how are you able to do all of that and at the same time go back home, be a husband and be a father as well?
Yeah. It's obviously challenging. I think anybody who's successful, anyone who's busy, it's sometimes time management can be challenging. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think it's all a matter of being present. So when you're present, then you can give 100% of yourself at that moment in time. So I'm present with you now. I'm doing this podcast with you now. After this podcast is over, I will go back to doing my virtual consults. I will be present in those virtual consults and I will connect with the patients that I'm meeting online. At the end of this, I will go and I have a shave scheduled. So I will go, I will sit in the barber's chair and I will be present in that moment and I will have my chat with him that I normally do. And I will, you know, be present and look around and see all the cool things that are going on in there. Then I will go home and I will see my children. I will be present in the moment. I will hug them. I will play with them. I will see my wife. I will be present in the moment and I'll tell her about my day and we'll connect. So if you're present in the moment, then you're able to give 100% of yourself at that time with who you are. And those people will feel that. And therefore, you basically you're able to have a full life. Now the flip side is that, you know, if I'm having the podcast with you now, but I'm thinking about, you know, tomorrow, you know, Monday's case, then I'm not really present in this podcast. You're not getting 100% of me. And I'm not really able to properly think about that case on Monday. So that's not really being thought about. So I'm kind of like in a no man's land.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people get frustrated and they say, well, I never get to spend time and I never see you. And it's because you're all over the place. Yeah. So if you just focus on being present and give 100% of yourself at whatever the task is at that moment in time, then I feel that you are one step closer to being able to have a much fuller life in which you know, you can enjoy all the different aspects of what makes a life. And it's certainly not all work, and it's certainly not all play. So you have to be able to divide your time accordingly.
Amazing. Great. That's some solid advice there. Definitely something I'm guilty of, always trying to, like, you know, have a million things running through my mind when I'm not at work and stuff. So I just hold up from that. But do you do anything to kind of like train your mind when you kind of like daily routines to be able to de-stress and make sure that you are laser focused when you are doing something?
Yes, I wake up pretty early in the morning and I work out. So I always give myself an hour to work out. And I'm by no means a bodybuilder. I have a bit of a pot belly going on right now. So it's not just for that. It's because I find that gets me ready for the day, and it gives me that time to kind of just reprogram myself and just get myself, you know, sorted and wake up. That's how I like to wake up. I feel that's how I kind of like get myself ready to prepare for the day. So for me, that 1 hour workout, it really sets the tone, and then I'm ready to get in and be me.
Okay. So just moving on now just to the reflection side of the interview here. So I call it Interview Secrets to Success. The reason for that is because I sit down with, you know, world industry leaders like yourself within dentistry and find out their path to success, how they were able to manage to get there. So a lot of young people want to be able to be like, you know, what is your daily routine? What time do you wake up? Do you work out? Try and follow, you know, as we see people do with, like, you know, Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, you know, what are their daily routines? Let me implement that. Let me try that for myself. So aside from work, if you're waking up early, you work out in the morning, then you go to work, is there any other daily routines that you have to be able to make yourself so focused to get as much done as you do?
I think, so the working out is very important. And as I said, having the meetings with my team, so we always start the day with a meeting. That's very important because you don't just want to just hurl yourself into your day. And every day starts with not only just looking at that particular day, we like to look at 1 week out from that day so that we're being proactive ahead of time. We want to reflect on the day before to see what we want to learn from, you know, what happened the day before. And we want to be sure that we have our days set up for the following day. And then, of course, looking at the day at hand. So that's the kind of way that we start our office. And then it's just a matter of everything sense, you know, everything's been planned and everything's been spoken about. So then it's just a matter of having a very productive day.
Sure. Okay. And then I know it's a broad question to ask then, but what would you say then is what's allowed you to become successful in your own work with your clinic, with your brand? What would you say are the key attributes that you always stayed persistent on and you didn't let go of that allowed you to become so successful?
I think it's important, first of all, because this world of success, I mean, it's a great word. Success is obviously something that you could strive for, but you also have to realize that success is very subjective. So, you know, if you compare yourself with, you know, I don't know, with somebody who's kind of at the same level of you, then you may say, oh yes, I'm very successful. But then, you know, then if you've got to kind of see, well, what are you judging success by? Is it a monetary thing? Is it based on, you know, how happy somebody is? Because it's success is, you know, it's an all-encompassing thing. For me, somebody who's successful, it's not just because they have, you know, a very profitable company. You know, you have to look, well, are you making a difference? Are you, you know, are you improving people's lives? Are you happy? Are you making other people happy? So there are so many elements that go into success. And I think it's important for, you know, your viewers, or this is a podcast, so your listeners to really be aware of that, you know. So first of all, make sure that you have your definition of what successful is. For me, my success, or what I consider to be successful, is a career that brings other people happiness. For me, that's a huge part of it. It's a career in which brings me happiness. So if I wasn't happy, however, I was, you know, seeing lots and lots of patients and doing really, really well on the financial aspects of things, then again, I don't think I would say that I was successful, because you have to be happy with what you do. And so I would say the reason for my personal success is that I feel like I made the right decision in terms of the career that I chose. So that had a huge role in it. And then I have a team which I absolutely adore. So that's a very important part of being successful is truly, you know, being happy to come to work and working in a group that you feel is supportive of you and gets you and is, you know, and wants to take this journey on with you. So that's hugely important. And then being able to, you know, go home and not carry baggage and not carry, you know, negativity or anything like that, and be able to be happy at home. So that's what I feel I am successful about.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's one that I want to follow up with. What does success mean to you? And I think, you know, you perfectly described it there. And it's more of, you know, I think everyone has their own definition of success to them. For me, for example, one of the reasons that I would think I'm successful is when I made my parents happy. For example, you know, both of us, you know, moving countries all the time, I feel like, you know, I've made it when I've been able to give back to my parents everything they've given to me plus more. So that's one of the things I'm always
trying nice.
to go for. Thank you. And so
that's really nice.
Thank you. I know I've got a long way to go there. As in, I think one of the first things I did when I graduated, because my father put so much money into my education, I know he always had a dream car being a Lexus. And obviously I couldn't afford it, but as soon as I graduated on finance, I was able to give him his dream car. And, you know, that's one of the things I've been proud of most. And then the next thing for me would be to buy my mother a house. Is, you know, it was what I'm
always... Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. You see, and look how happy that makes you. You know, I think a lot of times people think that, oh, if I get this and if I have this and if I do this, you know, that can, you know, that in itself can turn into chasing one's tail. Whereas, you know, having that goal of being able to give and to make somebody else happy can ultimately, I think, bring you so much more happiness.
As many people say, the act of giving is much more rewarding to yourself than receiving something as well. So when other people might look at success as, you know, like, you know, diamond chains or watches or fancy clothes, I think, you know, they would feel, or most people feel, more successful when they've been able to impact other people's lives and make a difference.
100%. I 100% agree with that.
So when we last sat down then, obviously the world was going crazy. We were in a pandemic. Everything was shut down. We're about a year on now that we were touching base again. What would you say has been the biggest lesson you've learned over the last year?
Wow, so many lessons. I think that one of the biggest lessons that came as a result of having the time for self-reflection was some of the things that we've actually touched on so far, the importance of just being happy. You know, I think that's something that you can lose sight of when you're busy and you're working and you're, you know, and you kind of like getting into this kind of mill, if you will. So I think the you know, just really just being happy and surrounding yourselves with people that make you happy, that bring you happiness, is something that really came to light for me during the pandemic. And you know, and again, I've always said that spending time with your family is really important, but it just made it even more important in terms of carving out times, especially as a parent to young children, because they grow up so fast, you know, and spending those times and making sure that you give them the attention that they so dearly deserve.
Amazing. And are you planning to raise up your kids where you are now and give them a future there?
Well, like I said, I mean, one of the main reasons that got me coming out to London was that I wanted to keep that connection with England, and I want to be able to introduce my children to England and the place that I was raised. So I'm hoping that what will happen is that we'll start taking the children and spending more time in kind of having them in both places.
Amazing. I'm looking forward to it. So just for our last segment of the interview here, What I'm going to do is just read out a couple of sentences, and I just want you to be able to fill in the blanks, really. So it could be one word or a few words.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the hardest part about my job is?
I think the hardest part of my job is being able to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, it's good. I have a bit of, you know, I definitely have OCD. So I'm always striving for perfection, and I see everything and I see every detail. So it's very, very hard for, you know, I'm definitely my own worst critic. So it's very difficult for me to just kind of like walk away and say, okay, we did a great job and that's it. And that's just it. Cause I'm always looking back in and, oh, but what if we do this? What if we do that? So I think that's probably one of the hardest parts of my job.
Okay. All right. 2020, the pandemic in general, gave me a new perspective on
The importance of self-care.
Okay. Okay. Working hard comes from
an internal desire to be successful.
Okay. So following up from then, my interpretation of success is
happiness.
Beautiful. Okay. I love that one. Well, perfect. That was so great. Thank you. We touched on a lot of things there, and I'm sure this episode is definitely very useful to a lot of young dentists. I've got so many messages of people saying, get Dr. Sam Salo on. So I'm really glad we're able to finally do this. For everyone listening in, where can they find out more about you?
I would say Instagram is probably a good handle. I feel like I'm pretty active on there, and I display a wide variety of different things that I do, both professionally and also socially. So I would say that would probably be the best platform to follow me on.
Sure. Okay. And what can we expect more from Dr. Sam Salo in the future?
Oh, you have to see. You have to keep watching.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Salo. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Likewise.